This is CliffCentral.com.
Frank wants to compliment Henry, who was in for Anthea on the Money Shot yesterday, for being well prepared and really interesting.
Mm.
Yeah, we try to bring in people who do that. Thank you very much, Frank. You can get hold of us this morning, 079-748-2090. Pumi is with us, and Sia is with us, and you are with us, and we're going to make your day better, not worse.
Yeah, hopefully.
All right. So many things to talk about, and one of them is that the Jeffrey Epstein saga continues. Apparently there are stories now of people who would go to extraordinary lengths just to get away from this maniac.
Isn't it just this story that never ends? There's so many details that emerge around this. And look, now there's someone who has spoken out as one of the sex victims of Jeffrey Epstein, and she says that she once was so desperate to escape Jeffrey that she swam in shark-infested waters. As crazy as it sounds, I get this. I mean, when you're around a freak and you've had a little too much, you're like, what are my options? I'll actually risk it with a great white before I risk it with
my
Jeffrey.
God. Just imagine being in a position where you have to choose between jumping into and swimming through shark-infested waters or hanging around with this man.
Yeah, so her name is Sarah Ransom. And she said that she was
held ransom by Jeff Epstein.
I didn't want to make that
so obvious.
So I was just,
poor girl.
I was just trying to be nice. She doesn't say how old she was at that time, but she was on the island, which is Little St. James, the Little St. James Island, but has now been nicknamed Pedophile Island in the Caribbean. And she had said that she had been raped 3 times that day.
Oh. Already. My God.
And in her words, she says, a shark would have been my best friend at that point. I didn't even think about it. It was just get me away. So she remembers stealing a quad bike on the island to flee. And she was planning to attempt to swim several miles to the neighboring St. Thomas Island. But she was spotted by surveillance cameras that lined the island and was quickly stopped by a team of his staff. See why I also think the people who work for him need to be apprehended for something?
Yeah.
You can't get orders like
arrest the girl on the quad bike.
Don't ever let anyone escape. Escape? If a word like that is used.
Yeah, you can't hold people prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
How old was she at the time?
This article doesn't exactly say.
Oh,
but
God.
We do actually know that Sarah was South African born.
What?
Yeah. She sued Epstein back in 2018.
Yeah.
And somehow it was settled out of court, but she's back now just speaking about this. She just says she was young and naive when she moved to New York in the early 2000s, and so that's how she first got to know Jeffrey. She continues to say, I had no idea of the hornet's nest I had walked into. She recalled saying that she was broken and an open book when another woman approached her at a Manhattan nightclub and gushed about this amazing guy who had helped her achieve her dreams.
Huh?
Okay. Well, yeah, we know time and time again when we discuss stories of manipulative people who've taken advantage of other people, they never have a red, bright label on their forehead saying, look, I'm a horrible person, stay away.
They just seem like normal, well-adjusted people.
Yeah. Sarah says Jeffrey was charming, was very charismatic when they first met each other, and said that, look, she experienced an amazing life with Jeffrey on private jets, and saying that it started off as just a normal relationship up until it escalated to full-blown attacks.
Let me just remind you, if you are a young woman and you suddenly get an offer to go on a private yacht or a private jet, be a little suspicious. It's not all up to the bad guy to do the bad things. I hate to point out the obvious, but if you are falling for this stuff, and if you are drawn to it...
Or a young man.
Or a young man, for that matter. You've got to be careful.
Don't say that.
I mean, if Sia got an offer to be on a private yacht next week, Thursday, he would take it. But remember, Once those pretty Instagram pictures of you with the sunset on the deck of the yacht.
The sun will set on my life.
When the sun has set.
Yeah, when the sun has set and those pictures have been posted, that's when the real shit goes down and it's not pretty. Right?
So, yeah, Sarah really gives a lot of fascinating details. Can I continue a little more with these?
Please.
She says that 6 months into knowing Jeffrey, she says that she does not remember seeing Jeffrey work from that point on. Every single day would just revolve with Jeffrey meeting another girl or Jeffrey being around other girls. And that was just his daily life.
This guy had, I mean...
Lest we forget, he was a billionaire, so he could afford not to actually prioritize working.
Except we don't quite know how he made those billions.
That's another good point.
They're still talking about the hedge that he dealt with a lot of hedge funds. We haven't heard anything from any of his business associates, though, who say, like, oh, no, we stopped a deal with him because he found this out.
Even locally, I think probably more locally, when I hear a person being a businessman, and that's the title, I'm always like, yeah, but what do you do? What do you do? What does this business do?
So you're a mogul.
So even as this Jeffrey Epstein story breaks and everyone like, billionaire, playboy, I'm like, yeah, but what did he do? Linked to hedge funds.
I agree.
Yeah,
I
but
know.
What did he do?
I want to know.
Like,
and be very suspicious
of
someone.
Is he like an analyst, right? Like, we know what Anthea does.
Be very suspicious of someone who can't tell you what their day-to-day work actually entails. I don't want to hear that you are a consultant to a hedge fund company. That doesn't mean anything to me. I want to know what you do. Do you reply to emails? Do you meet with people? Do you have a desk?
You know, all the innocent consultants are now like, hey.
Yeah, but what do you do?
What are they paying you for? Someone is paying you.
So when somebody says, what do you do? Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, I'm on this show in the morning. I do, you know, organize this. That's like doing stuff. But so, like...
So you think there's more dodginess in the tale of Jeffrey Epstein?
Very suspicious. Everything about this guy is suspicious.
Ooh.
Yeah, well, he did, though, get Sarah an apartment on the Upper East Side in New York City for her to live for the longest time. And she says, though, after the...
I don't want to sound like a real... suspicious person here. It sounds like Sarah did pretty well.
Sarah did live
from this deal. And, you know, as much as I would never, ever take the side of a rapist and or pedophile and all the other horrible things that Jeffrey Epstein was, if you're prepared to take some of this stuff from a bad person, you can't then cry victim afterwards. Of course, you are a victim, but I don't see you in the same serious light as someone who's been completely taken advantage of. I still think you know, obviously he's dead now, but if he were alive, he must face the full might of the law for what he did. And if he treated any woman like an object, if he was a rapist, as people say he was, a pedophile and all those things, he must be taken down to the full extent and might of the law. That I'm unequivocal about. But if you're the kind of girl who got yourself a very nice apartment on the Upper East Side, you're spending time on yachts and on private jets, you're kind of opting
in. You were
in
a transaction.
You're in a transaction. It's like the blessers and blessees in South Africa. You can't then cry foul when your blesser stops cutting you those big checks. That's when it breaks down. It doesn't break down while you're in it. And listen, there are people in marriages like this. So let's not fool ourselves. Human interactions have always involved this transactive capacity in some way, shape, or form. Not all human interaction, but a lot.
And it's unpopular to admit, though, but you can't be naive to these things.
No.
If you as well...
If you get an apartment for free, it's not for free. If you get a a holiday on a private yacht for free. It's not for free.
If you're hanging out with a gross old man, so you can partner.
I saw the most awkward thing on Twitter over the weekend.
What?
I didn't actually save this because I felt so cringeworthy. There was this, he looks easily like 19 or 20 years old, this little boy in the States who you can tell is taking a very sneaky photo in bed with an older man.
Right.
And he posted it, and it's just such a stupid tale though. He posted it saying, gotta put the work in for my new iPhone 11.
Oh.
And it got tons of retweets. Like, okay, you know what? It's tacky, but it's also funny. Oh. But you know what? We always say we want honest people in the world. So if that's how you put the work in, go ahead. Then the plot thickens. Because this tweet was circulated so many times,
the old guy saw it.
One little soul in the form of a young girl retweets and quotes the tweet and says, hold up, that's my father.
Suddenly there's a cost. It's and the cost is enormous. So, wow. That's awful.
That's why I will never leave Twitter.
I'm laughing only because he was an idiot by posting it, this boy.
No, but the old guy wasn't party to this. You know, he wasn't.
Yeah.
He did not give consent for his picture to be taken and posted on Twitter and retweeted and retweeted.
Yeah, that's a whole nother story.
So he
this
has
little
been taken
teenager
advantage
was
of
stupid.
In many ways. That he old has. Man has been taken advantage of in many ways.
And now he's always going to be the old man who had a young boy and a daughter who discovered this, thanks to social media.
Why didn't she save it for the family group, though, to the girl? You're the public embarrassment of that. Now everyone knows what your dad is doing on the side anyway. Well, in conclusion, with this Jeffrey Epstein update, Sarah ended up escaping because Jeffrey was on the hunt for a new young personal assistant. And Sarah was tasked with finding this young personal assistant. And she ended up saying, oh, no, actually, I know a great person in South Africa. Let me go to South Africa to interview her.
Uh-oh.
And that's how she
ran back, for her life.
She flew back to South Africa and was able to.
How did she escape? Get caught up with Jeffrey? So how did she get recruited into this?
Well, as I mentioned a little earlier, she said she met another woman at a club.
See, he had these women who would recruit for him. So all around New York, there were these wealthy women who were friends with Jeffrey, and they essentially recruited young women for him. So they were absolute party to every single one of these transactions.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. And you know, people get away with this because you're rich. And let's be very frank about this. If you were poor and you pulled this, you would be out on your backside immediately. You can get away with this stuff.
It's either money or power.
Well, that's exactly right. And they often spend time together, money and power.
Mm-hmm.
And when money and power spend time together, you end up with Bill Clinton going, I only flew in Jeffrey's jet 26 times.
Mm.
Only 26.
Mm.
It wasn't that many. I went to the island once or twice or 24 times. Wasn't that many?
I saw
Donald Trump saying?
Yeah, well, he says, I never went anywhere with Jeffrey. But of course, there
he
are pictures.
He was a very bad man.
There are pictures, yeah.
Yeah, I started watching, talking about power and the abuse of it. Last week, I started watching the documentary around a coach who used to coach the U.S. gymnastics team. Remember this scandal a couple of years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Of this guy who was part of the coaching team, but also was a doctor, so was around the young girls and the gymnastics team, and would,
what a story,
for the longest time, was not identified as an abuser, and all of these women kept quiet. Oh. But he would always say, yeah, of course, put that little, you know, lycra outfit on, and it's you and I, and wait, I need to make sure that I get right in there.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Bob Hewitt.
That's right.
Big story here in South Africa.
Right. Inati says, it didn't end there, Sia. That story that you told us about the young man and the picture and social media.
Oh, no.
Inati says,
oh, no.
The screenshot was then sent to the wife.
Oh.
And the response was, we will talk when I get home. That's horrible. All on social media. Yes, that's just so humiliating. All right.
This is awkward. I know.
Where are all these women who did the recruiting for Jeffrey? They need to be arrested too. They
absolutely
knew what they were doing. Yeah, that's a very good point. That comes in from Helen this morning.
Helen, I vote for you.
And not to condone lying, but I would have been slicker with how I speak out about it. If I was one of these women trying to save my own behind, why are they so obvious about how willy-nilly they got into these things and how really they had no issue going out to recruit more women? We appreciate your honesty, but you're also a little...
Yeah, you're part of the problem.
Yeah.
Here's Anushka.
Morning, guys. I'm listening to this Jeffrey Epstein saga, and I said to my husband the other day, I'm so disappointed that I've chosen the route to work hard, study, get my own, when all these girls and ladies of these new modern eras just doing what they please and getting their blessers and all these rich guys to pay for them. In our relationship, it's very much a competition. Me and my husband actually compete. Who's doing better? Who's earning more? Who's paying for more stuff? So I need to leave this man. I need to find myself someone that can pay stuff for me, that can take me places, give me... Okay, I've got my own hair, but give me hair.
Yes.
Give me a facelift, boob job, liposuction. Please, if you're out there, my name's Anushka. I need you. Contact me.
Isn't that nice?
She's asking with peace and love. Yeah, my name's Anushka.
She's advertising.
She was 2 seconds away from just giving out her ID number, latitude, longitude, 3-month bank statement.
Yeah, well, the point is those bank statements must suddenly improve. Then she'll know she's found the right guy.
You know, this life of morals,
I know, it's too much for some people.
Kills us. I've seen some things around town.
Well, here is a message now from Taryn. Taryn says, talking about Jeff, you have to watch The Loudest Voice. True story about Fox News CEO. Yeah, that's the story about, what was that guy's name? Roger.
Is that the one they're making a movie out of? Or is this the movie?
No, it's not a movie, it's a series.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name again? He was the CEO of Fox News.
Roger Ailes.
Ailes, that's right. And he would basically audition these very beautiful young news reporters. He'd call them into the room and say to them, hey, honey, you know, if you really want this job, you better wear skimpy clothing.
Mm.
And he would objectify them and he would pat their backsides as they walked past him. And he was a proper creep. He's dead now as well.
Oh, yeah. There will be an upcoming movie. That's the one I was thinking about. It will star Charlize Theron and it's called Bombshell. So based on... the same kind of story, Charlize Theron and Nicole Kidman.
The Loudest Voice has Russell Crowe in a fat suit.
Wow. I think Charlize is playing the role of Megyn Kelly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be exciting. I'll watch that movie.
Want to move on to another news story?
Sure, go for it.
It's a little sad that we have to bring this up, but this is just testament of how bad these xenophobic attacks and its effects have gone, because a grade 10 Congolese learner at Salt River High School was beaten so severely in a xenophobic attack by her own classmates.
Oh my God.
That she remains in hospital 2 weeks later.
Oh my God. What is going on in this country that this should be a story?
That it went, that it's trickled down to not just CBD attacks or adults being a part of it, but also school kids are now getting in on it.
You can't put that genie back in the bottle. You can't put that genie back in the bottle. This is abhorrible.
Donatane Ngofeni is the father of the grade 10 learner, and her name is Donette Ngofeni.
Oh my and God. Poor girl.
Donatane says that my daughter is a class monitor. And she was told by the teacher to look after the learners, and she did nothing wrong. They started mocking her and saying she's a foreigner. Donatane said that his daughter had complained to the principal about being bullied, but nothing was done. She also complained about being constantly verbally abused by her classmates, but still nothing was done. And that's when it escalated to these physical attacks. So Danette has been in hospital, and she initially actually didn't tell her family what had happened. She just said, "Oh no, I don't feel well. Can I go to the hospital?" And that's when it was actually discovered that she suffered multiple injuries, including abdominal injuries.
So girl. We were talking about Begicele and the issue of the army, right? This is now a criminal case. This is beyond the school, right? Mm-hmm. It's a criminal. This is an easy criminal case,
right?
But policing in this country lets us down. Like, this is
right.
Criminal case.
This whole class should be investigated, and that someone's got to go to jail.
Here's the sad thing that the family also bring up. They say that the school is trying to stay far away from this as possible. They're saying that the school has not contacted the family as just a matter of courtesy.
The school can't get away from this.
And every single
criminal case. This is a criminal case, including the teacher, whose job it is when you send your child to school. The teachers are supposed to be, they're like, there's a Latin word for the, like a parent in your state. Mm-hmm. That's what you sign over when you send
in
your kids.
In loco parentis.
We know?
That's one.
That's it.
Dice.
But that's it, oh papa. Nice one.
Oh papa. No, but yeah, it's true.
It's so gross. It's
such a criminal. This is a criminal. This is, you know, open and shut.
Mm-hmm.
And the family say that every time they try to contact the school is trying to play dumb, going, "We don't know what you mean. No, she's just sick. That's why she's off school. And so that's all it is, really." So the family's very fed up, and they've gone as far as contacting the Congolese civil society and some organizations around that, and they're saying that they're planning to take the school and the learners to court around this.
Good, they must.
You know, we get so outraged if some idiot racist says something stupid, but nobody's actually hurt. But when this happens and an actual schoolgirl gets hurt, there's not that much outrage. You see how little outrage there is? I mean, some idiot on a beach in Greece says the K word and the whole country goes up in flames. We want this guy brought to justice. We want him paying fines. Nobody was physically harmed, even though that is a disgusting way to behave.
Yeah.
In this case, someone is actually, a young girl has been harmed physically in an obviously bigoted, vicious, prejudiced, discriminating, nasty attack. And what happens? Everybody just goes about the business. Nobody in South Africa is that outraged. It's just Pumi and Sia and I. Nobody else seems to care. I don't see it all over the front pages of every newspaper. I don't see people going, "Bring these children to justice. Find out what kind of parents they have that let them behave this way. Ask the school. Where was your responsibility? Where are the teachers?" No, it's just all allowed to become some civil society initiative for the Congolese people.
But you see how we
are so good at us and them, hey? We are so good at it.
Not to get all philosophical, but do you see how important what we say and recognizing our influence is as well? Because these learners who did something like this were from households where probably certain words were passed that you can just call
people from
willy-nilly. Probably some ignorant comments were made in the house or on the way to school or something.
Well, they see politicians on Twitter every day.
And even things like that.
Advocating for this.
If you want to crunch numbers, maybe there might not be a direct correlation that can be proven around this. But, I mean, what does someone who's in grade 10, how old are you, 16, how informed are you to the point where you go, "Actually, I don't like people from other countries," to the point where I want to inflict violence? I think it's a lot to do with what we read, what is said, what we hear, and it's horrible.
Thank you, Sia, for coming around to my way of seeing things. Do you remember me almost crying in the studio about this? I'm telling you, people in positions of power are reckless with the things that they say, with the things that they tweet, and this year is the chickens coming home to roost.
But I still say individual responsibility.
Absolutely.
Like, if you are the person, it doesn't matter who's told you what, if you are the person who picks up a stick and hits another person, that is your fault. You are responsible. If 1,000 politicians told you to do it.
It is obviously the fault of these children who beat up the other
disgusting
one.
Disgusting children.
But what makes it easier is when you make an us and them. It makes it easier for them to think this person is not like me. This person is less than me. It makes it easier.
Right. Disgusting.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for depressing us further. I hope you have some... We've got to bring back Said by Sia at this rate. All right, come on, Sia.
Because I have some, Michael Jackson update.
How?
There's a Michael Jackson update?
No, well, I'm only bringing this up because we've stuck by the story for so long now. But the documentary Leaving Neverland won an Emmy over the weekend.
Right.
For Outstanding Documentary or Nonfiction Special, and the entire Jackson family and Jackson estate is up in arms around this. They say, how can something like this be honored when it was complete fiction? So they still stand by the fact that this is absolutely not true, not right, and they just don't.
Fiction gets honored all the time.
So what's the story then?
The Jackson family is just pissed.
They're just saying it's not true.
They
None
still
of it's true.
Are pissed, yeah. The estate said this is the Jackson estate, in a statement saying, for a film that is a complete fiction, to be honored in a non-fiction Emmy category is a complete farce. Not one shred of proof supports this completely one-sided so-called documentary, which was made in secrecy, and for which not one person outside of the two subjects and their families were interviewed.
Look, they may. Who knows that they don't have a point? But I'm afraid the Jacksons are just the least credible family in the world. They really are the least credible family in the world. I mean, you look at LaToya and Janet and Jermaine.
No, leave Janet out of it because, you know, she got that massive settlement. So she doesn't care about, you know, she tours every now and then. She's Muslim now, so she doesn't really care.
She's insane, like the whole family. They're all insane.
If you do want to just aimlessly wander the internet, Michael Jackson's son is now an occasional YouTuber. I'll find his channel for you guys, and I'll remind you tomorrow.
I am so staying out of this one. These Emmys had so many, like, so many contentious awards.
I just want to
the
find
Bayhive,
out.
And then they did it. They stepped into the Bayhive.
Just hold on. Which Michael Jackson child? Is it Blanket?
Blanket.
Or
Blanket.
Blanket.
And Blanket was the same kid who was dangled over the balcony, right. And he got the nickname because he was always covered in something. But now we've actually never heard him speak. It's like, wow, Blanket, you actually...
Blanket has a voice?
Yeah. So he's now like in his late teens. And a couple of years ago, he was living alone in a house because his elder siblings were out and about working. And his grandmother was always to and fro the hospital. And now the grandfather's dead as well. So Blanket was living alone for the longest time. So he decided to be a YouTuber. He reviews movies and stuff.
Wow.
Mm.
Blanket looks like... a cross between the girl who played Arya Stark on Game of Thrones and a Native American.
Like that girl from the Addams Family.
Yeah. Yes, Wednesday Addams. Blanket looks like Wednesday Addams. I've just Google imaged a picture of Blanket.
He is a little too pale for my liking.
Very, very strange. By the way, they've done a side-by-side comparison between Prince Michael Jackson Jr.
That's the first son.
Right, and Blanket. And there's no way those two have the same parents. Sorry. It's
the other
just,
one's a bit pink, hey?
Yeah. And then there's the daughter, Paris, and she doesn't look like either of them either. All three of these kids are very different.
Well, you know, you could somehow maybe make it work by saying they're like half siblings between them. It's the connection between Michael and these kids.
Well, I don't know. These kids all look very different to me. They're from different ethnic backgrounds. Everything. Totally different.
Paris has bright blue eyes.
You do a DNA test of those three. You wouldn't.
Utadako.
They need to be called. Idea. What's that talk show? Maury in the States.
Yeah, Maury Povich.
Yes,
yeah.
They need to be called to Maury anyway. All right, fine.
I think they need Nimrod.
Do you know how many Venezuelans have fled the country since 2014?
Fled South Africa?
No. Venezuelans. Left Venezuela.
Oh, because of how bad things are there.
Yes, exactly. Because communism. 4 million people. In the largest exodus in Latin American history.
Mm.
Most of them have gone to Colombia. A lot have gone to Peru, Ecuador, Costa Rica, Panama, the Caribbean, Brazil, Argentina, and Chile. And they've lost 4 million people because socialism. So you need any more evidence that this is an evil and wicked philosophy that does nothing but harm human beings? Take a look at Venezuela.
4 million people.
4 million people displaced.
Yikes.
That's not messing around.
I'd love to hear what their Department of Tourism is saying.
There's no one goes on holiday to Venezuela. Not right now. Not right now.
Yeah, it's a little too much.
Well, let me tell you, very exciting. The second episode of Blind History Season 2 is available from today. Vlad the Impaler. We will play it for you live in just a moment. Dracula is a fictional character, a satanic creature that drinks the blood of his victims. Bram Stoker made the creature up, but the real-life inspiration of Vlad Dracul is much more sinister. A cruel, sadistic monster that put thousands of people to death in the most unimaginably vicious ways. Find out more about Vlad the Impaler, how he got his name, what he did, and why you should be glad he's in Blind History and not in your living room.
Yeah, I'd much prefer that.
Brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. Take a listen. Later on, How's It China? Episode 2, where we're going to be looking at Chinese history in South Africa. We're going to be talking to some of our guests about things that are going on in South Africa for Chinese people, whether or not they've integrated into our own society, how South Africans have done in terms of welcoming the Chinese population to South Africa, and we'll get into some really interesting experiences and stories.
Hmm.
You excited, Pumi?
We kicked it off last week.
I'm right.
Absolutely.
Very, very good. All right, what else is up?
Yeah, I just want to bring this up simply because it lends to the conversation we were having earlier. Let's go by what the SANDF is saying. But they said that almost 400 people were arrested in joint law enforcement operations around Cape Town since Thursday last week. So a police spokesperson, Sergeant Noliso Rekwana, said that 191 wanted suspects were among those 395 arrests that were made between last week Thursday and this past Sunday. Yeah. As the forces were moving around different parts of the Cape.
Are they just clamping down on criminals in general?
Yeah, they say that as part of their evidence list includes tons of weed, tons of tick, known internationally as crystal meth, one firearm, two zip guns, tons of ammunition, and 75,366 liters of booze.
But so I thought it was legal to smoke weed now.
Well.
So 400 people arrested and 100 and whatever.
It's still not legal if you have more than, I think it's 500 grams of weed on you. Then it's not legal.
I'm trying to see.
Yeah, so, and also if you're a dealer, that's still illegal.
Yeah, they don't have
you
the quantity.
You can be a user, but you can't be a dealer.
So, yeah, this is all part of what they've dubbed Operation Lockdown, and this initiative began back in July of this year. And remember, that's when the SANDF arrived in the Cape. That was back in July as well. And had mixed feelings from a lot of people. But do you want to also know how much the army has cost us?
Yes, please. Let's have a look.
1,320 soldiers have been provided to support the police thus far. for just a cool amount of 23.3 million rands.
That's not so bad.
That's the cost of the army.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, according to that story Pumi read earlier, doesn't seem like they're making that much of a difference.
For 23.3 million
rands. Yeah, the story's on News 24.
Right. Yeah.
Very, very good. Are you ready for some blind history?
Let's hear about this Impaler guy.
Oh, he's not the Impaler guy.
Vlad.
All right, we have a... I mean, this is probably one of the more grisly episodes of Blind History, but I'm sure you'll love it. Vlad the Impaler. An actual person that existed and earned that name. And when we come back, just after that, How's It China? Episode number 2. Take a listen to this. This is the story you've been waiting for.
All around his Transylvanian castle of Bran, Vlad Dracul had impaled 20,000 men so that they slid down slowly on the stake, inch by inch, until it came out of their mouths. Before they could die, this moaning, screaming forest of pain and blood was his announcement to the world that he was to be obeyed. He had enough cruelty and hatred to torture and kill many more men, women, children, and animals, and his wickedness would birth the legend of Dracula and the vampires. His real reputation was actually much, much worse. Other methods of execution included skinning and boiling. And he once hammered nails into the heads of foreign ambassadors who refused to remove their hats at his court. Such was the bloodthirstiness that it was also rumored he drank the blood of his victims and feasted on their flesh. Vlad the Impaler. Another episode of Blind History with Anthony Medera, CEO of Taylor Blinds and Shutters, me, Gareth Cliff, and today someone really grisly and grim.
Vlad the Impaler.
You wanted to cover this guy.
Apparently, Dracula was based on Vlad. We would say it's loosely based on Vlad. If you look at Dracula, tall, pale face, very handsome. Women love him. Men fear him.
Mm-hmm.
Vlad, short, stocky, bushy eyebrows, protruding temples which make him look like he's got a massive head.
Mm-hmm.
Long nose.
Not good.
Scary looking.
Yeah.
But loved gore. He loved hurting people, watching them die slowly. We spoke a little bit in the beginning about impaling. He used to blunt the stake so that the stake would go slowly through the different...
Apparently he'd oil the end, though, just so it could get in there. And then
and it was blood. Slide down over hours or days. And he'd build it in concentric forms around his castle in the town.
Oh, my God.
So he was very particular and quite strict in the way he lined his victims up. That was said that he really wanted to work hard on eliminating poverty. So he invited all the peasants and the mentally ill to his castle.
And the physically disabled.
And he gave a huge banquet for them, which was fantastic as a prince.
And they ate,
and they were very, very happy. He closed the doors and burnt them to death. He eradicated poverty. So he did his bit for his region.
Well, the surname Dracul, which means dragon, there was a mysterious order of the dragon which was begun by, I think, the Hungarian king or the Holy Roman Emperor at the time. And he was brought into this when he was about 4 years old. His father was a member too. They took their surname from it, Dracul. And he wasn't really a king. Later on, he established himself as a king, but he and his father and his greater family were more sort of Wallachian nobility of a certain kind. Their big geopolitical issue in that place, which is modern Romania, more or less, Transylvania, was the Ottomans, the Turks, who were putting pressure on the Balkans, obviously, from that point of view. They were militarily on the ascent. They were also obviously Muslims, whereas the Serbian, Romanian, Transylvanian population was Christian. There was this constant tension between the two. And in fact, I think one of the reasons why this guy was such a misfit is because his father sent him off as a hostage at age 4 or something to go and live with the Turks. And while he was there, he was very badly behaved and he was punished.
So they wanted to prove that his dad would remain loyal to the Ottomans. They told his dad, look, you better send your two sons. So he sent his youngest son, and then Vlad, who was the middle son, they sent him to the Ottoman court where they were kidnapped. I put it in inverted commas because they were taught, they learned science, they learned languages. That helped him because he was a terrorist. He used to infiltrate in all different ways to pretend he was a Turk. So they learned all different languages, philosophy, religion.
Well, and he wasn't badly treated, but he was so badly behaved.
Yeah, so what? But
he hated. They used to whip him and beat him.
They used to whip him and beat him. And he, so Radu, he's young. They called him Radu the Handsome. He loved it there. And he became very, very good friends with the Sultan's son, Mehmet II. And we'll hear a little bit about him later. But Vlad hated it. He was insolent. He had a fiery character. And they had to beat him to keep him under control. And in the end, they said, I can't handle
it. Who says there aren't bad eggs? I mean, this is just a bad person from day one.
And he just won't go away.
So, no.
So they thought, no, he has a good move. We're going to appoint him as a puppet prince in Wallachia again. And so he went there. And then the Hungarians came and chased him away. And so obviously he lasted literally a few months. But here's where he showed his mettle. He was extremely brave, and he was always at the forefront of each battle. So he went to the Hungarians and said, listen, you can't just kick me out.
Yeah.
And he explained to them who he was and why he hated the Ottomans.
Well, he did. Lifelong.
Lifelong. Mm. And they believed him, and they looked after him. So that was where he had the opportunity to go back and take back the kingdom for the Draculs finally.
Right. And he was installed sort of by the Hungarians.
Correct.
Yeah.
But he was Dracula.
Yes.
And that's where they say Bram Stoker got the name from, because Dracula is really the son of Dracul. And I think in modern-day Romania, it also refers to devil.
Well, the dragon. It comes from the dragon. He was definitely disturbed, but he had a lasting influence on the area. And there are people who still regard him as being quite interesting. One of them is Prince Charles, who claims him as an ancestor, and he is, and is fascinated with the history of Transylvania. In fact, Charles wanted to buy the castle that Vlad the Dracul lived in and spend some of the winter holidays there. A little bit twisted. There might just be a bit of that blood in him after all.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
But didn't he invite – I mean, I just want to quote again from this book, because he was invited – or he invited, rather, a whole bunch of boyars, the Hungarians – to join him for Easter Sunday one year. And he killed the oldest in every family and enslaved everyone who was still young enough to work. Many of them died working on new fortifications for his castles in conditions so severe that their clothes disintegrated, leaving them naked. I mean, what's wrong with this dude?
And also adulteress. You wouldn't want to be adulteress.
He'd cut off your breasts.
And then put them in your mouth as if you were eating them. Sewed them to your mouth.
And put you out so that your whole body was displayed and you were not allowed to be taken down until you'd actually started to rot off the poles. Just a savory guy.
The interesting part was he was a thorn in the side for the Ottomans. So he kept going insurgencies across the Danube and trying to take territories here and there, or just messing around with them. He employed terrorism in those days. He used to infiltrate, pretending he was a Turk, take his best men, and then just kill everybody. He killed 20,000 Turks and then put them up in a forest of bodies, impaled them. And that was the final straw for Mehmet II. Mehmet had become the Sultan. And he later on is revered in history as taking the city of Constantinople.
Which was impossible to take because it was well fortified. It was, yes, on the Bosphorus, all of that stuff. Yeah.
Constantine the Great, 1,000 years before, built the greatest city in the world. And so many had tried to take the city. So Mehmet was preparing himself to take the city. So he got cannons, he built ships, he trained his troops. And then this person across the Danube kept killing all his people. So he decided, no, I'm going to take you out. So then when he arrived on the scene, there was a forest of impaled members.
And this is horrifying. 20,000 people in a forest of dead bodies. I mean, I don't think in all of human history there's anything comparable to that in savagery or brutality.
Mehmet wanted to turn around and go home. They had to say, listen, stick with it, Sultan. Stick with it. And so he stuck with it. And Vlad knew he was in trouble. So this is where he really is. He was a real warrior. He knew, no, I can't fight.
Wily.
They've got 100,000 Turks, strong. Yeah. Turks were coming at him, and he only had 20,000, but he bolstered his 20,000 with women and children so to try and build up some strength. But so they basically had him surrounded. So the Ottomans set up camp. Vlad went and infiltrated the camp at night.
Pretending to be a Turk.
Pretending to be a Turk. He caused absolute mayhem, and he went in to what he thought was the Sultan's tent to kill him, but it was the tent next door to one of the highest ranking officials, and he killed them by mistake. So he could have killed Mehmet II before Mehmet II had taken Constantinople. It would have changed the course of history.
Changed everything.
Yeah. Then Mehmet was so impressed by this individual and what a strong warrior he was, and said, no, I'm going to leave him. And once again, they had to say, listen, we need to finish this.
Jeez.
And they did.
Don't leave someone like that alone. It's just unbelievable. Despite a daring attempt to infiltrate the enemy camp, he was overwhelmed by the scale of the Ottoman onslaught. As the Turks surrounded his castle in 1462, his wife jumped from the window, killing herself, while he fled. And he actually ended up going back in to the Hungarians, securing their support a second time, becoming king for a short while again after that, and then he was deposed, ultimately.
But what happened during that time was they actually caught him and they threw him in jail, the Hungarians. The story goes that he was impaling mice in his cell.
The little sadist. He was hurting mice and other things that ran into his cell and putting them onto stakes.
Exactly. And then he must have had charisma with those big swollen temples. He managed to woo the cousin of the king. And so he married her.
Yeah, and he was welcomed back into society. Yes. Like there was nothing wrong with him.
But then the Ottomans were fed up and they came and they chopped his head off and took it back to Constantinople.
Yeah, it was near Bucharest. And they say it could even have been his own men who beheaded him at that stage. And it was displayed on a stick in Constantinople. That's the end. Here endeth the lesson on Vlad the Impaler. If your kids start impaling things on stakes, send them immediately for psychological counseling and possibly some hardcore drugs. My God, blind history. And by the way, Radu the Handsome, speaking of blind history, they captured him at some point and they burnt out his eyes and then burnt him to death. There couldn't be more brutality in one chapter of history than at this time. This is the 1400s.
Yeah, and they boiled his brother his dad.
Oh my God.
So that, no wonder Vlad was a bit upset.
Oh, what a horrible, nasty end for all of the people in that family.
And that's why Dracula pales in comparison to Vlad the Impaler.
Dracula seems like a very honorable dude.
Exactly.
I mean, he would just occasionally seduce a woman and drink her blood. No big deal. I'd rather have that than Vlad the Impaler living on my block. Some sick individual. Thank you for listening to Season 2 of Blind History. This is one of the many episodes that we have planned for you, and there are plenty more to come. It's brought to you by Tailored Blinds and Shutters. Only on cliffcentral.com.
This is cliffcentral.com.